Tales of a well-established lesbian. Chapter 49. Why do you guys even need prides anymore? I mean, it's not like things used to be, is it? You guys can get married and everything now. There often comes a moment when you find yourself the spokesperson for the entire LGBTQIA+ community, or providing answers to questions that could be easily Googled. But no. Instead of hiding out in my office, eating my freshly cooked pizza from the counter outside in the shop, and, flicking through ASOS, my boss has now got me reflecting on why we still need pride in 2017. It turns out that a lot of these straights just think it's a chance for us to have a piss up, an excuse to be really, really gay. I mean, yes, okay, for some of us, that is absolutely it. But in the bigger picture, we're still tolerated. I don't dispute that we are accepted by many, but there is still a tolerance, and our progress on gay rights continues. And here's the thing, there's still a lot more to be done, even though us guys can get married and all that now. And honestly, even if total acceptance and full equality of rights is achieved, we'd still need pride to remember and honour those who got us to that point, and to celebrate ourselves. You know, I can bang on at you about the countries where homosexuality equals death, or point to the rollback of basic human rights in many Eastern European countries right now. But for a lot of us, those are distant problems. They don't see their people suffering this treatment, the ones they love. And we still need pride because of the small things, as well as the big things. You know, I rarely tell anyone about the misgendering I experience regularly. I only talk about my discomfort with having to use women's toilets in public in a comedic sense. I try and steer conversations about my lack of career progress away from the subject of the visibility of my gayness. I've learned to accept in many rooms, for many reasons, I'm gonna be the odd one out. And whether it's clothes or toilets or sports or holidays or work, there is an added layer of things that I have to think about, that a lot of gay people have to think about. And if prides and pride months and LGBTQIA+ history months save me from having to be a walking a lesbian Google, then I'll take it. Aside from protests, parades and parties, there's another thing I mentioned that I think pride gives us. And it's that celebration of ourselves. It's a moment when you don't have to be the odd one out. In these streets, in this moment, you belong. You're not an outcast, an oddity or a misfit. You're just a variation on a theme. We're part of the rainbow of humanity. So, I explained to my boss, you can see that pride is still very important and very necessary. I mean, she's nodding. She gets it on a logical level, but there's still a bit of a disconnect. I tell her about the most recent homophobic incidents I've had to deal with over the last couple of months. I give her the edited highlights of the joys of coming out twice. I mention the homophobic landlords that we've encountered, the twin beds that we're always assigned. I can see it really starting to register with her. Now, I've been trying to get a little cash out of our business to sponsor our local Pride event. And up until now, my boss has kind of been a bit lukewarm about it. And she agrees to back my request for Pride funds if I'll make a video similar to the conversation we've just had, then she can share it around the business and raise some awareness. Her only demand is that I don't eat pizza the whole way through the video next time. It seems like a fair deal to me. And besides, right now I will add almost anything to my list of things to do to avoid the weird limbo land that home has become. I mean, it's not entirely unpleasant, it's just really weird and strained. Ash and I managed to start the odd conversation here and there, but we never seem to get anywhere with it, and we just drift back to the separate but parallel lives we're living right now. And because we're not really talking, I am reading everything into Ash's silences. I'm still distracting myself with Natalie, but I can't help analyse whatever Ashley is doing or not doing. And it doesn't help much when I find out that Ashley and a group of our roller derby teammates have arranged to go and see that London versus Team USA game without me. It helps even less when I get there and I'm given the cold shoulder. Probably wouldn't have bothered me so much if Ash had just been with Pat, for example, but she wasn't. She's there with Phoebe and Marco. And it seems like that cold shoulder is collective. Bodies are crashing into each other with tremendous skill in front of me. These are actual sporting heroes of mine. In a crowd of hundreds, I could have been underwater. The noise just wasn't reaching me. I sort of felt separate from my whole life, from my whole body. If the ghost of Roller Derby Future had appeared and told me that this was where I was headed, I'd have believed it and I'd have felt a whole lot happier in the knowledge I'd wake up soon. But this wasn't a vision. This isn't a glimpse into my future. This is my life right now, already unravelling. In less than a week, Ashley, Phoebe, myself, Erin and Mila are flying out for our weekend in Latvia. And up until this point, I've been convinced it's going to be fine. We're all grown-ups. There's nothing to worry about. Except I'm hurting on a lot of levels and I'm ignoring it. I'm hurt that Ashley has shown no signs or effort to reconcile us. I'm hurt that some of my friends are freezing me out when they strongly implied they wouldn't. Natalie is the one who listens to me rant about how unfair all of this is. I hear the irony in that, believe me. And it seemed odd at first to be talking to Nat about how I was feeling about all this other stuff. I mean, surely she doesn't want to hear this. But she reassures me it's okay that I need to talk through this stuff with someone and she's going to be there for me. Honestly, I'm amazed at her understanding of the whole situation because it is so bloody messy. Yet, Natalie wants to be there for me in whatever way she can. In some respects, just being listened to, being heard by her means more to me than being desired by her. She's remarkably calm about the impending trip to Latvia. You know, the one I'm going on with my sort of ex, Natalie's ex, and two of our other friends. What I am discovering is it is surprisingly easy to put off worrying about the real world when you escape into the arms or bed of another woman whenever possible. Every one of these problems has been designated a future me problem. All of them. Now, past me was one of those little girls who was labelled bossy growing up. And I'll be honest, I've never really grown out of it. And when you add that to my only child complex, I can be a bossy little brat who likes to get her own way. I mean, sure, I've learned to play better with others over the years, but in my heart of hearts, I know that if there's a team, I'm going to want to take charge in some sort of way, at least have an input. Except, for the first time ever, on this particular trip. I am taking a back seat and I'm only worrying about myself. My bag, my stuff, my tickets. There's no packing for two this time, right? And I'd love to tell you that this means that I can just kick back and relax. But no. As the departure date approaches, I make subtle inquiries into certain areas of our trip. For example, how are we getting from the airport to the city? Where's the camping gear? Where do we pick it up? What kind of camping gear have we got? Do we need to bring anything extra? Have we sorted out the car hire? All I ever got were vague but reassuring promises that everything was in hand. I don't know who Mila was trying to kid. I'd been in the group WhatsApp when they tried to sort out the Airbnb for one night. I can't even tell you how much of a mess flight bookings have been. They were unnecessarily tense and complicated. I'd let the whole thing go, right? This is Mila's trip. I am showing I have great faith in my buddy. I'm sure she has it all in hand. I mean, I'd ask her, except her new relationship is going so well that she hasn't been home in a week. Out of offices are on. Rucksacks are stuffed to bursting with festival essentials like bikinis and glitter. I am taking Mila to the airport in my car and Phoebe is taking the others in hers. Despite my dad-like inclinations, I don't insist we arrive ridiculously early to the airport. I mean, after all, we're not checking our bags. Let's just get there in time for breakfast before the flight. Ta-da, our first group agreement. Mila, who has been too busy shagging to pack properly, is running late. There's no bother, I tell her. Our breakfast buffer should keep us all in good time, and for once, I don't drive like a granny, just to make sure we don't miss our flight. As I take the slip road to the airport, and I realise we're going to make it, we're only going to be a couple of minutes late, I am totally going to have time for a bacon roll. We're winning, right? Mila is reorganising her badly packed bag in the passenger seat. As I try to change gear without grabbing a pair of her socks, Mila's activity comes to a sudden stop. Says Mila. It's not a good It's the kind of that is invariably followed by bad news. And I'm right, this dickhead has forgotten her passport. But it's okay, she says, she knows exactly where it is. Oh, well, that's all right then, I say, as I pull up at the fucking airport. The girls are already there waiting for us. We are only 5 minutes late. They join us, they're very excited about our breakfast mimosas. I get out and explain why Mila is looking frantic on the phone right now. I suggest that maybe they go ahead and grab breakfast and get on the flight. I'll stay with Mila, I'll keep him updated, and if we have to, her and I will get the next flight out. We check that they've got all the Airbnb details, and we'll all cross our fingers that all of this worrying will be irrelevant. So off they go to begin their holiday with the ritual of the early morning drinking in airports, and I get back in the car. Mila is absolutely certain that her passport is in her girlfriend's car, which is great. She can just drive it straight down to us. Except she doesn't answer the phone while driving. It's a very sensible policy, which normally I would fully support. But in this instance, I just wish she had a hands-free kit. That's all I'm saying, right? And I don't really see how it's going to help, even if we get through to her. She has been driving in the opposite direction for as long as we have, and now longer. She's never going to make it back to the airport in time. I really, really want to throttle Mila right now. It's far too early in the morning to be dealing with this shit. Finally, Kate, Mila's girlfriend, answers the phone. By some weird miracle, she has not just driven straight home. So, if she leaves where she is now, she might just make it to us in time. It is going to come down to minutes, seconds. Mila and I need to be ready to run. All I can think is please, please let security be clear. Kate arrives, Mila snatches the passport and a kiss, and it is game on. The girls are doing everything they can to get them to hold the gate for us. All we have to do is run. And I would love to see the CCTV of that particular pass through Luton Airport. Departures brought to you by parkour and roller derby jamming skills. Useful on track, in airports, and whilst Christmas shopping. We went over obstacles, under rope systems, took stairs in two jumps, slid around corners. I mean, hurdled luggage. Never in my life have I been the last person to board a plane. But as Mila and I run down that last long corridor to the gate, the girls finally get on, and then it's just us. Have I mentioned how much I hate running? I swear to God, I was so glad I wasn't sitting next to Mila, because if I got my breath back, I'd probably have a word or two for her, and not the nice kind. This was not the relaxing start to my weekend away I'd been hoping for, as Erin relays the details of their amazing fry-up and mimosas. Hurling back in my chair and just think, still, we made it on board. It's plain sailing from here, right? Right? There is absolutely no plan on arrival. Colour me surprised. When we finally make it to Riga, the Airbnb couldn't be harder to find. The directions were so vague that all five of us had a go at interpreting them to no avail. It was the third passerby who solved it for us. By now, I am terrible company. I'm low on sleep, I'm annoyed at the hassle we've had throughout the day. And frankly, I have the patience of an overwrought toddler. I take umbrage at the fact that when we can't all sit at the same table in McDonald's, it feels like Phoebe and the others are trying to freeze me out. No, seriously, the toddler in me is absolutely running the show right now. I pick a completely unnecessary argument with Phoebe in the streets of Riga. Even if I had one or two good points to make, which I don't, I would have let myself down badly on the delivery of those points anyway. When Phoebe starts to cry, I realise I've gone about this in all the wrong way. Our group walks through the city to our main destination that evening, the Sky Bar. And as I walk and calm down, the remorse hits me. I can't believe I've just made my mate cry. Fuck's sake. This is not what I wanted. Phoebe doesn't deserve it, and if I don't fix it, this trip is going to be horrible for everyone. Erin listens to me as we walk and I try and explain myself, and all I'm actually doing is reaching for the same old excuses, and as I hear them, they sound hollow, even to me. And so I shut up and I drop back and I fall in step with Phoebe and I apologise a proper apology. No excuses, no justifications. Own my stuff and apologise for it. Phoebe accepts it. We both have a cry and a hug, and then I buy her an obnoxious cocktail to further support my apology. We enjoy the glorious view, and all is good with the gang by the time we get back towards the apartment. The girls want to continue the party, and I really need to sleep so that I don't ruin every single day of this trip by being a grumpy bastard. So I leave them to it and take my terrible toddler self to bed. It's the smartest thing I could have done, I tell myself, as I enjoy the early morning Riga sunshine. I'm refreshed, I'm revived, and I am ready to festival. A few hours in the city while Mila pops off to collect the hire car, pick up the camping stuff from her mum, and hang out for a little bit. And it is a beautiful city, Riga. The four of us sit down to breakfast in a square in the shade of a church that is just beautiful, like something straight out of a damn fairy tale. My phone ringing pulls me out of the little daydream of the moment. It's Natalie, so I step away from the table to take her call. And for the first time, Natalie and Ashley are present in the same sort of moment in my life. And I'm very glad that one of them is on the phone and in another country. It was a lot simpler, I'll be honest, when Ash and I were spending no time together, when I was still livid with her. But I'm not right now. And maybe it's because Mila's been the trip's disaster artist, but Ash hasn't been a nightmare to be around so far. Do I feel bad because I'm conflicted about how I feel, or do I feel bad because I'm not doing the right thing by anyone? I tell the girls it was me mum on the phone, checking up on me, and I think I've answered my own question. By early afternoon, we're all on the road, stocked up after raiding the local hypermarket. Mila and I take turns in driving, if for no other reason than so I can tick having driven in Latvia off my list. Now, I love these girls. I do. They're my friends, and I enjoy spending time with them. But if you leave them together for too long... Actually, scratch that. Doesn't really matter how long you leave them together. The conversation will always, and I do mean always, come back to poo. They discuss their poos in a level of detail that I don't even want to know about my own. They all know that I hate a poo conversation. I hate them. I don't want to discuss your bowel movement. I'm not interested. And this only encourages them. Mila, who has now taken the opportunity to have a couple of drinks, is shit stirrer number one. They leave me with no choice but to activate my ultimate dad mode. So help me God, if I have to hear one more poo story, I will pull this car over. There'll be no festival for anyone. It works. Not because they're afraid I'll actually pull over and Mila can't drive now, but because they're too busy laughing at me to even talk about anything, let alone poo. It's all no shits and giggles from here on out. The festival setup looks amazing, and we lug all our gear to our group designated spot that Erin has been guarding whilst fixing us a round of refreshing beverages. The selection of camping gear seems slim, but after yesterday, I'm just not getting involved. I'm just going with the flow here. Not the easiest when it comes to light that we only have the inners for the tent. The girls reassure themselves it's not going to rain. That's what the forecast says. There's no need to worry. I don't want to bring up the drop in temperature at night, condensation or lovely morning dew. None of that seems entirely helpful. I guess they've worked out it's not ideal, but there's bugger all we can do about it now. All I do is make sure I hang on to the car keys. The car is my backup sleep plan, which becomes, very quickly, my primary sleep plan. It is cold, it is damp, and I am pinned at the back of a tent. It is not working for me. I got up, buggered off to the car, and I slept so comfortably. Now, normally, sleeping in a car wouldn't be that comfortable, but this is a people carrier. Put the seats down, lie down flat, get yourself a Lilo, it's almost paradise. Well, in comparison to tent life. Thank God for them, it didn't actually rain. And the festival itself is spectacular. Everything they promised it would be. A magical woodland wonderland, huge stages in clearings, and a sandy beach with beautiful blue seas just over the ridge. I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that it brought Ash and I closer again. You know, maybe being away from it all made it easier for us. And there were some lovely moments that reminded me of all the good that's gone on between us. But I couldn't shake the feeling that none of it's enough. And by the third night, our conversations have finally gotten a little more serious. Breaking up in a forest in Latvia did not seem like my smartest idea. It didn't seem very fair either. But at the same time, during these conversations, I'm trying not to give false hope either. But at some point, I said the wrong thing, and in a heartbeat, all that distance and more was back between us. I'm pretty sure I know what I need to do now, and I can't hide from it or pretend anymore. Ashley has heard it in everything I've not said to her. Amor vincet omnia. That's the Latin, isn't it? Love conquers all. Depends on how you look at it, I guess. But it didn't feel like that to me. Because sometimes, love just isn't enough. There will be more day-to-day situations in life, the more routine, the more mundane, the more boring stuff, that's going to require more of both of you than just love. And I didn't feel like Ash and I had that anymore. I've been waiting for the answer just to turn up and make itself known. But I think I've known it all along. It's just been waiting for me to recognise it. So I choose a different Latin motto. Vini, vidi, amavi. I came, I saw, I loved. And being the very gay, sentimental butch I am, I got it stamped onto a set of dog tags at the festival to remind me of this moment. Monday mornings at a festival can be tough going. Even more so when the weather has turned in the night and the rain has swept in. I woke up to the girls looking thoroughly soaked, fed up, and glaring at me through the car windows. I let them in. Only seemed fair. We were all coming back down to an earth with an almighty thud. We smelled. We were caked in glitter, and our showers at home seemed so much further than 12 hours away. Unsurprisingly, the tent had not stood up to the climate so well. We used it as a makeshift sled to haul all of our crap back to the car. We were finally all loaded up and homeward bound. We returned the camping gear, we returned the car, and we made it to the airport. And not one of us was sorry to be getting on that plane. We relived the highlights, we groaned at the stories we now have to tell about each other, and we discuss all of the ways we're gonna get clean. Somehow, we are gonna get home in one piece with no real drama or disaster to speak of. I figure the least I can do when we get home, what with the way we'd left things, is let Ashley scrub the weekend off first. The things we'd left unsaid in Latvia was enough to make Ash want to continue or finish the conversation. So we sat down together. And once we finally did start really talking, it's all starting to come out from both of us. It turns out that Ashley went ahead with renting this house all for me. And I'll be honest with you, this is breaking news. Ash continues. She knew I wanted a garden and a space for a shed and for different projects and that we wanted a guest room. And so that's what she got me. I mean, all of that is lovely. I just can't get her to see or understand that I'd never actually asked for it. And that actually by doing this at a point where I couldn't afford it, she's completely maxed out my part of the budget. I want a lot of things in life that I can't afford. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to stretch myself or put myself in a difficult situation to get them. No matter which direction the conversation goes, the theme seems to remain the same. It's money. It keeps coming back to money over and over again. And I only heard the question when it came out of my mouth. What are you bringing to this relationship besides money? It felt brutal when I said it, when I heard me say it, when I saw it land with Ash. And I can't tell you what her reply was, but what I can tell you is that it did not help the situation in the slightest. If the recent trip had made me realise anything, it was that I could not break up with Ashley and stay in the same house. I knew I wouldn't be strong enough. And it didn't seem very sensible either. It seems like that comment has really ticked Ash off and she's not okay about things. Solutions that don't involve bank robbery, lottery wins and going cap in hand to my parents are thin on the ground. I don't even know someone with an empty caravan on their driveway or a room for one if I can find a caravan. And then, like the fairy godmother she is, Irene saves my bacon once more. Offers me a place to live at bargain rates available almost immediately. There's only one catch. It's in the next town over. Honestly, mate, I'll commute from anywhere if I can get myself out of this situation. And like that, it's done. My parachute is packed. My plan is a simple one. I just need to hang on until I can get the keys to the new place and then have a final conversation with Ashley. It's a nice, straightforward plan that's going to give us both time to process this. Life and Ashley do not care about my best laid plans. One evening, Ashley and I get into a conversation and it escalates. And before I know it, I've ended it. I've broken up with Ashley after more than a decade. Ashley goes straight to angry. We're at opposite ends of the house and I feel terrible. I do not know if I've done the right thing at all. And then my phone starts blowing up. There are all sorts of messages coming in from people on all sorts of platforms asking me if I'm okay. Like, what the fuck? The messages keep coming. I call one of my friends back and then they send me a screenshot of Ashley's Facebook. With the background colours of a pink to blue gradient, Ashley has announced to her Facebook world, official news, it's over and now I'm fucking single. Hashtag kissing the last decade goodbye. Hashtag not hurt, broken. Hashtag she called Ty. Like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with that? What I have to do is I have to fend off the purely nosy bastards who want to find out what's going on. I reassure the rest that I am as fine as I can be in this situation, and I tell my real friends that I'm actually a little surprised and disappointed by this from Ashley. I mean, I kind of get it, as she rightly points out, I am the one who called time, but does that mean we have to behave like this? Does that mean that I'm not sad about it too? That I'm not hurting? It feels like you're allowed to feel like that as long as you keep it to yourself. Because of course, this is a self-inflicted injury and all that. It is not a fun weekend in the house with Ashley, who is clearly adopting a slow self-destruct strategy. So when Irene's estate agent calls on the Monday morning, I feel nothing but relief. I want out as soon as possible and I can pick the keys up at 5 p.m. The coward in me does not want a confrontation with Ashley, so I hatch a plan there and then. I pop into my boss's office, I explain the situation and I request the rest of the day off. I want to pop home, grab my essentials, you know, like my clothes and my bedding and my toiletries, and get out. I know I can't just say nothing. I can't just vanish without a word. So I sit down and I write Ashley a letter explaining that I think we both need space or we're going to end up hating each other. I explain I'm only taking what I need of mine for the next few days. I reassure her that I will keep to my financial commitments until we agree on how we're going to proceed. The crisp white envelope is waiting for her on the coffee table. I know this is the chicken's way of doing it, but honestly, I am struggling myself with all of this and I just need to make it a little easier for a moment. I chuck my stuff in the boot and I leave the house. And the front door fills the rearview mirror. And I'm suddenly aware that the next time that I'm likely to be in that house is going to be at Ashley's invitation or permission. I won't just be able to come and go as I please. As it goes, I'm ahead of schedule, so I park up in the big Tesco's down the road from the new place and wait for the estate agent to call. And then I see it in the passenger side door pocket. The crisp white envelope with Ashley's name printed on it by my hand. There's no letter. There is no explanation at the house. There is no softening the blow I have just delivered. I look at the clock. Can I make it back before Ash gets home? Unless this car has a flight mode button I have overlooked, I am absolutely fucked. I've got 11 minutes to do a 25-mile journey in rush hour traffic. Fuck, 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 fuck. Not like this. You know, like, I am a coward right now, I will admit it to you, but I did not want to be a complete bastard, and Ash deserves better than this. I'm pacing in the car park right now, I'm following the white lines of the bays, and there's nothing I can do. 15 minutes later, my phone begins to ring. It's Ashley. I've never wanted to pick up my phone less. But with the top of that letter staring at me from the door pocket, I know I've got no choice. I pick up the call. Ashley's voice is so different than usual. It's trembling almost. She doesn't fuck about. Have you left me? She asks. I start to try and explain that I've taken just a few of my essentials for the next couple of days. She interrupts. You're not coming back, are you? It's the last question that she can utter. I try to tell her that we'll talk in a few days' time, and I stop because the howl that comes down the phone breaks my heart into pieces. It was a sound that felt like it was tearing through my body. Ashley's defences are overrun. She's done. She continues to cry and scream and howl down the phone. I don't even think she can hear me anymore. Primal, animalistic, those are the words I'd use to describe this sound, and I couldn't listen to it anymore. I couldn't calm her down, and I couldn't tell her it was going to be okay. I was the reason it wasn't, and I was the reason why it may never be again. I tried to tell Ashley I was hanging up, and she just howled louder and longer, and in the end I hung up, and now my own tears are coming. Ashley calls me again and again. She calls from her mobile, and then she even calls from our landline, which really threw me off. Home, coming up on my caller ID, was a massive punch in the gut. It felt entirely apt for my day to end with me pumping up an air mattress in a completely empty house in another town where I don't know anyone. The sound that Ashley had made was echoing around my head. I could like feel it in my chest. I knew that leaving was going to be painful, but I swear to you, I never expected that. I've never heard Ash like that, so full of pain and anguish. And I'd done that. I'd caused that. And the guilt brought another wave of doubt and a million more questions. God, I just wish there was some way to know if this is the right decision to make, if this is the right road to take. I'm so scared of going the wrong way for another decade. It doesn't matter how incredible parts of the journey were. All right, it's me again, talking to you again. It's lovely to have you back once more. If you haven't already, could you please, 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 leave a rating or a review, especially if you listen on like Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps other people find the show. And if you love the fact that the show is ad free, please consider donating or subscribing via ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/well-established-lesbian, to keep it that way. Last, but by no means least, I want to thank you so much for your support over this last year. I still can't believe that it's a year tomorrow since chapter one went out. And here we are, just finishing chapter 49 with plenty more to go. And being the well-established lesbian I am, I couldn't possibly let an anniversary go uncelebrated. It is not in my nature. So make sure you are following on Insta at well-established-lesbian to be in the know. I'd say your treat will be coming your way around midweek. You know, knowing myself as I do. In the meantime, I want to thank you for the privilege of your time as we've traversed these chapters. It's been a real pleasure having you along. Have the best of weeks and take care of you.